This is Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. Ahead of Veterans Day tomorrow, we're reflecting on the experience of soldiers. A century and a half after the Civil War, our attempts to understand it may lead us to visit a preserved battlefield, which is now a park, or we may engage in a reenactment and get the feel of a rough wool uniform on a hot summer day. Historian Michael Adams argues, nothing we can experience today can take us anywhere close to the horror of the Civil War. The manicured battlefield doesn't show the mud, the pools of blood, the piles of manure and attendant insects that surrounded the soldiers. Our fellow reenactors look pretty healthy and well-adjusted. They're not barefoot, not fighting disease, hunger, and shell shock. Dr. Adams, retired Regents Professor of History at Northern Kentucky University, will be in Baltimore tomorrow to discuss his book, Living Hell, The Dark Side of the Civil War. He joins us on the line now from WNKU in Northern Kentucky. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Why did you feel this book needed to be written?
The reason I wanted to do this is that when you read the letters, memoirs, diaries of the period, you are absolutely startled by the candor and by the information that you learn. We think of the Victorians as repressed, but in fact they were not. The soldiers, the civilians, they talk about a lot of things that we don't often place front and center. For example, there was rape in the Civil War by soldiers. It's often said that there was very little, but I think there was. And the soldiers talk about the experience at a depth that, as you said, we cannot recreate in any other way but by going to their words. For example, and I should say parenthetically, I am certainly not opposed to reenacting. I think it's wonderful educational experience and material. But as an example, the slow-moving bullet of the period, the standard issue mini ball, 0.68 or 0.7 caliber, large lead bullet, did not usually exit the body. It was too slow, and it did terrible damage roaming. I call it traveling. So a soldier may say that his comrade was hit in the nose, the ball takes out his eyes, rattles around in his mouth, take out teeth, and exits his windpipe. We cannot recreate that in any other way except to bring those people back to be heard in their own voices. And the reason I think it's important is that war has had, continues to have, a very important role in our culture, other cultures, and we really should know as much as we can about it.
I was struck by the statistics you quote about how young the armies were, both the Union and Southern armies.
Yes, and for some of those boys, the experience was overwhelming. You know, there was a tendency to romanticize what was going to be the experience on the battlefield. They call it seeing the elephant, as though you were going to a circus show. And the horror of the firing line just overwhelmed some of them. They either deserted or, frankly, lost their senses. They didn't have a psychiatric vocabulary, so they called it shook over hell. These poor young men shook violently, and they often could not come back from it. Some did. We might even say many did, but they couldn't all handle it.
Yeah, you write about the mental wounds that were not really recognized as injuries of war.
Right. And this is something where I think we each have to determine how far we can speculate. There was not a psychiatric vocabulary, you know, we're 40-odd years or whatever from Freud and the other pioneers in psychiatry. And so the Civil War generation, when it looks at what is happening, goes to a much earlier vocabulary than we would use. They, for example, say that a soldier has lost his character, which is a little bit pejorative.
I guess.
Today, I think we'd say a veteran might have post-traumatic stress disorder. We wouldn't say that they'd lost their character. That's a bit of a moral judgment.
You also write that the technology of killing, you describe it as killing on an industrial scale, the technology had advanced more by 1860 than the practice of leading soldiers in battle, arranging them on the field.
Yes, very definitely. Technology, our apps tend to develop faster than our ability to adapt to them. So that in the Civil War, we have gone from the smoothbore musket firing a round ball that is not accurate over 50 to 75 yards. It flies wide. You probably couldn't hit a barn door at 100 yards with it. We have come to the rifle percussion musket, which is accurate, it is efficient, doesn't misfire. And that extends the effective range of the musket to perhaps 500, 750 yards. The officers do not adapt to that change by and large. They still crowd the men together in shoulder-to-shoulder firing lines, blasting away at each other at criminal or suicidal ranges. I just did a little piece on one of Alfred R. Ward's sketches of Pickett's charge at Gettysburg. It shows the Union and Confederate lines during Pickett's charge, the third day at Gettysburg, no more, I would say, than 15 yards apart. And at that range, the Springfield or Enfield musket was absolutely shattering. There is one, perhaps, extenuation for those officers, and that is that often the volunteers weren't well trained in musketry. They probably couldn't use the rifle musket as effectively as it could be technologically. But still, I do believe those officers failed to adapt. Some tried. For example, Francis Barlow, Union general, spread his men out into a thin skirmish line. He stopped that solid block of targets. Most didn't.
As Professor Emeritus Michael Adams here on 88.1 Maryland Morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about his book, Living Hell, The Dark Side of the Civil War. Was disease a greater risk to soldiers than being wounded in battle?
Oh, yes, it was. I think the ratio was pretty well established to be 2-to-1, and there are a number of reasons for that. One is that medical science was still at a relatively primitive stage. Even if, let us say, doctors in the field wanted to be more hygienic in their operations, their treatment of patients, the water wasn't available. In the book, I talk about the armies as moving cities. They move across the landscape, 60, 70,000 men, and they all need water. They quickly exhaust the clean water supplies, so that physicians, for example, who are doing amputations, may just to have disgustingly bloody filthy water in which to wash their tools and clean wounds. In addition to that, the volunteer soldiers were themselves a problem. There was a kind of democratic, I'm damned if I'm going to do that attitude to army rules and regulations that governed cleanly behavior, so that soldiers often, frankly, defecated outside of the latrines, the trenches. And of course, you couldn't do much about the fact that all of the army horses, thousands of animals, mules, were defecating. And so the armies were accompanied by millions of flies that spread disease. Bad food played a role. The soldiers often did not have good, fresh food, certainly not vegetables. So yes, disease was a terrible thing. And in addition, ironically, we think of country boys as more healthy often than the, you know, the products of the Victorian urban slum. But many country boys had grown up without being exposed to childhood diseases such as mumps, measles, and when they contracted these sicknesses as recruits, it could end up making them very sick or even killing them.
This book is so depressing to read. Was it hard to write?
Yes, I think it was. One of our sons said it was not the feel-good book of the season. But I think that the pleasure, if I can use that word, it's almost obscene, but the pleasure was in bringing back these voices and letting these people speak for themselves. That, for me, gave the project its value. I would say to someone, why would you want to read this book? Because those people have a right to be heard, not the famous ones, not those rationalizing why they decided to make this attack or not make it, but ordinary people who were the Americans who went through our bloodiest and in many ways most formative experience.
I really appreciate you talking to us. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Michael Adams, he's the author of the book Living Hell, The Dark Side of the Civil War. Tomorrow evening at the Ivy Bookshop, Adams and two other Civil War historians, Claudia Floyd and Ron Coddington, will discuss new perspectives on that war. We've got more information on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. More of this interview there, too. I'm Sheila Cast. There's more ahead on Maryland Morning. Stay with us on 88.1.